Hear that? Up there in that tree? Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes, this is me and all my homies love native manu, and this week we are talking about the kaka. That's so funny! Did you just put some fart noises on the computer?
Sounded like it, didn't it?
Welcome to Studio Pete. How are you this morning?
Yeah, morning, Olive. Very good. Survived another week of winter.
Yeah, well done, my mate. So this week we're talking about the kaka, one of our native parrots here in Aotearoa. Can you give me the, give me the classification of this bird, Pete?
Yes, it's endemic.
Sorry, not native, endemic.
Oh, endemic, native, yeah. Same thing, but endemic's more like only found here. There are three subspecies, the North Island kaka, which is at risk, but it's got some recovery. So there's some positive signs there.
Yep.
The South Island kaka, it's nationally vulnerable, so it's more at risk.
Yeah.
And the Chatham Islands kaka, unfortunately, is extinct.
Yeah, okay. Very sad to hear about the Chatham Islands kaka.
But, you know, our parrot species, they're ancient. They go way back to the Gondwana supercontinent.
I love when you call the birds ancient.
They are.
I just think it's so cool.
Like, and when their sort of original parrot species came to Aotearoa, and then split into the kakapo, the kia, and the kaka.
Yes, okay.
And kaka used to be very common across the forested areas of the Motu, but now much restricted due to predators, food competition, habitat loss. North Island kaka is doing better. It's got some strongholds on Hen and Chicken Islands, Hauturu Otoi and Aotea, and that spills into Tamaki Makaurau and the Coromandel. They're in the big forests of Whirinaki and Puriora.
Where is Whirinaki and Puriora?
They're sort of in the central to lower North Island.
Okay, yep.
Yeah. And also Pukaha, Mount Bruce.
Mm.
They were introduced there and they're doing quite well there. There's quite a few on Kapiti Island. And they're increasing in Wellington, spilling out from Zealandia.
So
which
many
is
in
amazing.
Wellington, yeah.
In the South Island, the reintroduced Abel Tasman Park, so there's a few there, there's a few around Nelson, but they get a bit more numerous as you go down the west coast, better numbers in Fiordland and Rakiura, Olva Island and Whenua Hoi, Codfish Island. But overall, there's probably less than 10,000 birds.
So doing okay, but always without a native manu could be better.
Yeah, could be doing better, yeah.
As for tangata whenua relationship to the kaka, kaka is the general name for a parrot. So we've got our kakapō, our kaka, and our kakariki. We've also got the kea as well. The kaka could also be called the kōri, kōri whai, tata, pōpō, which is a name for male kaka, or perehere. I really like this one. Flocks of kaka gather in the early morning and the late evening to socialise.
Yeah.
And this led Māori to believe that they were like chattering and gossiping.
And I'm sure they were, or do, still.
Yeah, I really like that. Two Māori kaka are rangatira among the forest birds, and there's a pūrākau about kaka flying back to Hawaiki and then coming back to Aotearoa, and the flock leader carried a stone on the way back to Aotearoa, and this stone was given to some tohunga and he gained the stone's power.
That's a cool story.
I couldn't find what the stone's power is, but I just thought, well, amazing.
That's awesome.
Amazing pūrākau there.
I want one of those stones.
Well, you're not getting one, sorry.
I've got some down at Port Waikato that I've collected and I've imagined that they've got these special powers.
Yeah, you could imagine that the kaka brought them from Hawaiki.
Yes.
For tūhui, the kākā stole coloured feathers from the plumed porete, which is the yellow-crowned parakeet, because the kākā wanted to achieve the recognition and treatment that the porete received. So a bit of green envy there, jealousy.
Fair enough.
Kākā were once a valuable food source. If they were speared or caught with a noose, then they were plucked and steamed and hāngi. But I thought this was cool. If they were to be preserved, stored in packs of gourds, baskets of tautata bark, or inflated lengths of seaweed.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's like some natural salt.
Yeah.
Isn't it? That's really good.
And as you know, our kākā have beautiful red feathers, and these were highly prized for korowai and other kākahu. Yeah. So if you had a korowai made out of red kākā feathers, you're the shit, eh?
Yeah, you're the man.
But yes, we've got some whakatauki as well. First one, o kākā. What does that speak to, Pete?
Yeah, it's parrot's rations, and it's used to describe the sort of light provisions for a journey if you're going on a tramp. So it sort of reflects about how much a parrot could carry in its claw. I reckon that's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
O kākā, I just got my o kākā snacks with me.
A light little pack.
Yeah.
Just with some food in it.
Just your little lollies and skoggin. another one here, kākā wahanui. What does that speak to, Pete?
A big mouth kākā.
I think this is a great one.
Used to describe someone who's a great speaker or very talkative. Oh, someone I know like that. or whose voice clearly carries above a crowd.
Yeah.
Very much reflects the loud screeching when they sort of fly above you at height.
Yeah, I like
that. So that's really appropriate.
Yep. And I can think of many people in my life that also applies to. All my honeys with ADHD. and then he kākā kaiuta, he manga te moana. What does that speak to, Pete?
The kākā rips the wood as the barracuda rips the net.
Ooh.
It's very evocative, and it sort of describes the power of that manu to rip bark and dissect trunks.
It's got a pretty meaty beak.
Yeah, really strong. Yeah.
So we'll get into what they kind of look like. How would you describe this bird, Pete, and what do they eat?
Well, I can't use the word gorgeous.
You can.
I need to give that a rest for a while. So stunning, loud, screechy, destructive, in-your-face manu.
Yep.
Our endemic parrots, they've just got huge personalities. And kākā like to play and engage in chasey games. And they do play fights where one sort of rolls onto its back and the other sparring partner just jumps on top of it, gives it a bit of a peck and a scratch. Then they swap positions. And it's like they don't hurt each other. It's just a bit of rough and tumble.
Yeah, I love that. Just give each other a bit of a rumbux.
Yeah, exactly. So that's good fun. And then you hear the kākā well before you see them.
Hard out.
And I've been on Aotea, Great Barrier, a number of times, heard this raucous gang of maybe 6 to 8 kākā screeching overhead as they sort of head off to the next forest buffet. And it just stops you in your tracks, and you're compelled to look up and you track them. And you watch them and then you forget what you were doing, and it's just a little bit discombobulating, but beautiful.
Yeah, they're pretty special, and I always love living in wellies and hearing them and you can hear their wings as well, it's a very special sound to hear.
Yeah.
But yes, is there variation between the North Island and South Islands?
Yeah, a little bit of colour variation. South Island kākā has more of a white plumage on the head.
Yep.
Whereas the North Island manu's more olive brown on its head, but
both
on their bodies, they've got this lovely olive brown plumage over most of the body, but under the wings, they've got that brilliant scarlet sort of red feathers that when they're flying, it just really stands out.
Definitely. And similar, because the Kia's also got that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But obviously they live in quite different environments. Is that how you kind of tell them apart?
Yeah, and the Kia are bigger.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think the Kia, the they're sort of orangey,
Definitely.
Orangey red. So yep. It's a different colour.
Yeah.
It's spectacular as well.
Yeah.
But the kaka is this brilliant red.
Mm, yeah. Absolutely. The South Island Manu, a bit more meatier than the North Island ones.
They probably
need that meat on their bones.
For the cold.
For the cold, yeah.
A bit of extra fat.
Yeah.
And for males, they have a slightly bigger beak than the females, but it's not that noticeable.
Mm.
And the obligate feeders.
What the frick does that mean? I love how you bring all these words in.
I know. It's a good word. It just means that they've got a very specific dietary need.
Mm.
And they often feast on one type of food while it's in season, then they move to another type of seasonal food. But they feed on nectar, fruit, berries, seeds, sap, honeydew, and insects.
Yum.
Yeah. And they've got, we talk with the tui, they've got that freaky brush-tipped tongue.
And if you haven't looked that up already, we'd strongly suggest Googling the slow-motion video of the tui brush tongue.
And then you'll have some interesting dreams. But the kaka, I don't know what I meant by that.
Nightmares.
Anyway, the kaka, they've got a semi-brushed tongue. It's a bit like they've got bristles on the tongue rather than those fully-fledged kind of brushes.
Yeah.
And when they feed on sap, they use their sharp beaks and they sort of cut these horizontal lines along the bark, and then as the sap bleeds out, they sort of slurp that up. And
wow.
Very good at ripping bark and shredding trees for insects. And in Wellington, they're making a real mess of some trees. I was in the park there a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And there were all these old pine trees. And the bark was just ripped to shreds. And it's like, good on you, kaka.
Get rid those of those invasive pine trees. Yeah, I love that. As for breeding, Pete, are they monogamous?
Yeah, monogamous, yeah.
Monogamous.
tree hole nesters.
Yeah.
So they like trees like the matai, the rimu, totara, miro, and sometimes dead trees.
I think the kaka is the bird I want to be.
Yeah, good.
Like, they've got a mean diet.
Yeah.
They're monogamous.
Yes.
They live in the trees. They nest in the trees.
Life.
That sounds awesome.
Except for some of the threats, which we'll get into.
We'll get into. But so, the positives.
On the positives. So they nest in those trees, and the nest is lined with wood chips, which is very efficient. They just rip it off the nest wall. So it's so efficient. Why waste energy gathering moss, lichen, cobwebs, feathers from afar when the resource is just right there? You just sit in the hole and you just rip the chips off and that's your bed.
Oh,
that's pretty, yep, pretty
bloody good,
makes
mate.
Makes sense.
Bloody good.
And their courtship behaviour, it's very simple, but it's a very clear ritual.
Yep.
The male sidles up to female on the branch, gently pushes the female with a foot and then pushes it with its forehead and its beak, and then it sort of retreats a bit and waits for a reaction.
Okay, consent.
And
consent.
Then if the female just stays put, it's green light. Let's go, mate. Happy days. But if the female is not impressed, she flies off and the male is left to ponder the mysteries of lost love and rejection. And I was thinking about that. I thought, this is quite a good ritual we could adopt, There's all this online stuff. But we could have something like you approach someone you fancy and with your index finger you just tap their left earlobe twice, gently. And then you step away and you wait.
Yeah.
And if you get a swift punch in the solar plexus, you're probably not impressing them.
Yeah, mātewa.
Anyway, I just thought
that could work
or not.
And how many eggs do they lay in their little tree nest?
They 2 to 5. They're sort of white eggs, incubated by the female for 24 days, but the male provides food for the female. So
sharing the good
relationship.
Parental load, yeah.
Chicks fledge after 10 weeks, so very long time on the nest, which makes them vulnerable. And then when the chicks leave the nest, they can't fly. So they're a bit flightless on the ground for a week. So they're extra vulnerable there until they can fly.
Can they get to a certain weight and then they're a bit more robust and they can fight off any predators?
I think so. I mean, they've got pretty massively strong beaks.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be bitten by one of those if I was a freaking stoat.
But, stoats will have them.
Yeah. And can lay a double clutch in a season.
Yeah, if there's a lot of food around.
So double clutches when they lay two sets of eggs in a season. As for threats, we've kind of talked about it already, but what are some threats to the kaka?
Usual suspects, habitat loss, mammalian predators, stoats, rats and possums. And a lot of females get killed on the nest being tree holes.
Yeah.
So if being a stoat finds the nest, it's a hole they can't get out, so they get killed. And as a result, the population's got this massively skewed population, about 6 males to 1 female.
Wow.
So that's a crazy ratio. And you think there might be, you know, just under 10,000, but the vast majority of those are males. So your breeding pairs is really constricted.
Mm.
So that's a problem.
Maybe we need to encourage some gay behaviour in the kaka community.
It's not going to increase the population, though.
But just for fun.
Oh, for for emotional support and love and that. Yes.
And companionship.
I know. They probably do it.
Yeah, I imagine.
I would think so.
The natural world is very gay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
now, browsing
really
animals, possums, deer, pigs, they compete for the same food.
Mm.
And wasps, they compete for the honeydew and insects.
These bloody wasps.
And people are a problem because people feed the kaka because, they're inquisitive, friendly birds.
Yep.
But feeding the kaka is a real problem. They need really specific food types, which they find in nature.
Mm.
And if we feed them, it's like living on KFC.
Mm.
It's not healthy and it really impacts their breeding success. So the message is don't feed the kaka.
Wow. Good to hear, because I think what we hear is, you know, you should provide some food.
Well, for the nectar eaters, the twos and the toho and bellbirds, it's all good to feed them.
But not for the kaka,
because they've got that really specific diet that they need for breeding and good health.
Yes. And then a final threat, lead poisoning.
Yeah. It's like the kea, they're both attracted to lead because it tastes quite sweet to them.
Mm.
And there's been some recent studies in Wellington that have found kaka suffering from lead poisoning.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm not sure. Over time we should be just phasing out lead in building materials.
Absolutely. I'm like,
there's no reason why we need them.
Oh my God, it actually like hurts my brain to even try and... I'm like, why are we still doing that? Yeah.
So if you're getting your roof replaced or something, make sure you don't use lead nails.
Yeah, you don't need that.
Or flashings. Yeah. You know, there's alternatives.
So many alternatives.
Yeah.
So yeah, what's your final message there?
Yeah, well, they need ongoing help, like so many of our manu. The gender imbalance is a massive concern, and there's a lot of threats. But we're seeing some good recovery in parts of the mutu. And that's sort of due to, work we're doing to protect them and look after them. And we just need to build on that to retain the stunning taonga.
Yeah, it's a real taonga.
Yeah.
And what's your song that you've got for us today?
Song this week, Crowded House, Something So Strong. Fantastic song. It's about the kaka, the strong birds, strong beaks, big strong personalities, so... I think it's a good song.
I love it. Mati Wapi.
All right, ka kite.
Thank you.
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.